for those who don't know, what Slack is, Alex?
So Slack is a general messaging service that is used in really offices all over the place at this point. Amazon and at least one other tech company have expressed interest. $9 billion is a hefty amount for Slack. As you mentioned, the last public fundraising round valued the company around $3.5 billion.
Donald Trump ready to reverse Barack Obama's efforts courting Cuba. Official sources saying he'll announce a plan in Miami on Friday which will restrict American travel and limit business deals with Cuban companies linked to the military. Trump promised a tougher approach on the campaign trail and says he wants to prevent U.S. money from reaching the hands of what his administration sees as an oppressive regime.
Today we're seeing a pattern that has become all too familiar, right? You get a sell-off, and then in the last hour or so of trading, you get what appears to be a buy-the-dip phenomenon where stocks come up off the lows.
It's become a real feature of the market. One of my colleagues and I looked at each other about 10:30, 11 o'clock and said, all right, at what point do they get the market back to unchanged today? And it wasn't because we felt there was any real buying coming in. It just felt that the selling had dried up. And then when that happens, I think that investors, whether we talk about them being automated or not, have gotten conditioned to looking for opportunities to buy dips because it's worked.
WGN Radio's daily conversation about the life of business and the business of life. This is The Opening Bell with Steve Grzanich on 720 WGN.
Good morning, everyone. Welcome to the program. Today is Friday. It's June 16th, 2017, 5:11 in the morning. Glad you're here with us for our Friday edition of The Opening Bell. Seems like a long week, hasn't it? Glad that the weekend is finally here. Our business week is over. We're going to have lots to talk about this hour, maybe some cheap airfare later in the show. We're going to bring in Rick Cini for our regular Friday conversation. Also, Paul Nolte is here from Kingsview Asset Management. We'll bring in Paul momentarily as well. But first, on the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk this morning, futures are pointing toward a positive open later on Wall Street, up about 24 points on the Dow, NASDAQ, and S&P futures single digits this morning. Crude oil at $44.65 a barrel, up just about 0.5%. Around the globe, from markets, Asian stocks generally mixed today as a tech sell-off on Wall Street shaded sentiment among investors who continue to focus on central bank policies, including Japan's decision today to keep the ultra-lax monetary stance there intact. The Bank of Japan opting today to keep its monetary policy in place while noting signs of improvement in the world's third largest economy, comes after an interest rate earlier this week here in this country by the Federal Reserve. The dollar rose against the yen, weakened against the euro in Europe this morning. Markets are all generally higher, with the FTSE up almost 0.5%. The DAX and the CAC are up as well. The CAC up almost 31 points, and that's good for about 0.5% as well. Some stories we're watching for you. Greece avoided another potential brush with bankruptcy after striking a deal with European creditors to tide it over for the rest of the year. They also gained assurances that its repayment burden will be eased when it finally can stand on its own after nearly a decade on financial life support. Nevada Governor Brian Sandoval has signed into law the nation's strictest requirements for pharmaceutical companies to reveal how they set certain prescription drug prices. The bipartisan legislation focuses on insulin, one of many life-sustaining prescription treatments sold in the U.S. at prices that have skyrocketed over the last decade. Twitter has unveiled a new look, and much like some previous changes the company has made, it is not going over well with people who actually use the service. The San Francisco company says its new design emphasizes simplicity, making it faster and easier to use with bolder headlines and more intuitive icons. It also changed user profile images from square-shaped to round. And that's our jumping-off point this morning with Paul Nolte of Kingsview Asset Management in Chicago. He's a senior portfolio manager there, an SVP. That stands for Senior Vice President. Paul, good morning.
Good morning, sir. Nice to be with you again.
It's good to have you here. I guess we'll start with the big news of the week. That was the interest rate hike. We all expected it. But what was the news that came out after?
You know, it was interesting in the press conference that she talked about inflation. You know, there were certainly a lot of questions around inflation, and it really came on the heels of very poor economic reports that morning. Retail sales missed the number. CPI, PPI were both lower than expected. So how can we be, you know, the focus really being on employment, but the other part of the mandate is inflation. And so the question is, how can you raise rates if there's really not a lot of inflation? And we've been stuck below this 2% range on inflation for the last 4 or 5 years. And for whatever reason, we can't seem to get inflation in the system, which is, you know, kind of what everybody's looking for. And it's also a good way, in a very perverse way, a good way to allow us to pay back all the debt we have with much cheaper dollars. So there is an incentive to see some higher inflation in the system.
Well, if you had to find a reason why we're not getting that inflation number up, what would you say it is?
You know, I've maintained for a very long time that we're suffering from too much debt, and that debt is really the wet blanket on the economy. It's not allowing us to grow very robustly. It's keeping a lid on inflation. We're seeing declines in commodity prices around the world. We're seeing certainly some declines in telecommunications, et cetera. So we're not seeing that robust growth. And everybody's been looking around at wages and saying, geez, we're at full employment. Why aren't wages going up? And I think there's some dynamics that are going on there that are keeping a lid on wages as well. How long you're unemployed for and those types of things that are keeping a lid on wages as well. So it's going to be a difficult road to get us to higher inflation, and I think by extension, higher economic growth.
And there are some, after this week's decision by the Fed, and you know how everybody goes in and does all of the analysis, that if that doesn't happen, this might be the last interest rate this year.
That's true. And we saw when the economic data was released before the Fed decision, the chances now of a rate hike the rest of the year has gone from roughly 60-65% to about 40% or so. And you saw it in the bond market where the long bond, those yields beyond 20 years, let's say, actually rose in price, and the yields came down again because those are driven more by inflation expectations. So as inflation expectations come down, those yields come down. So we're getting a flattening of the yield curve, which is generally an indication of slow economic growth. And we've been seeing that now for a while.
Janet Yellen has spoke specifically about tech stocks and pharmaceuticals. We had pharmaceutical news there in our open. She's concerned about both of those.
Because both of those have come down in price. When you take a look at telecommunications, the pricing and the aggressive nature of pricing has really seen those prices come down dramatically. But when you add those back in, you're only getting about 2/10 more inflation in the system. As we've talked about before, the biggest component of the CPI, CPI numbers is housing and implied rents. And those haven't really moved too terribly much at this point. They're a little bit higher, but not significantly so.
And if this is the last interest rate hike this year, this could be the last for Janet Yellen, too. Her term is up next February.
It is up next February, but the administration's been kind of quiet about what they want to do. They're doing a search right now, but as we've seen in the past, what gets said today might change tomorrow. So it is possible that she gets reappointed, but we'll have to wait until we get a little closer to February to start placing bets.
Yeah, it might change tomorrow, then change back, and then change back again.
Exactly.
From ABC News, Wall Street Now. A tech stock sell-off yesterday drove down the NASDAQ composite 29 points to 6165, and the broader indexes followed suit. The Dow Jones Industrial Average ended the day 14 points lower at 21,359. The S&P 500 lost 5.5. Shares in Booz Allen tumbled in after-hours trading after the company disclosed that its billing practices were under investigation by the feds. Booz Allen supplies intelligence analysts to the government and once employed self-avowed secrets leaker Edward Snowden. Bank of America is cutting an unspecified number of jobs in its hometown of Charlotte, North Carolina, where it employs about 15,000 people altogether. The laid-off workers in the bank's technology and operations unit are being offered the chance to apply for other open positions within BOA. And Amazon has released the Dash Wand, a device that allows you to scan grocery barcodes and to order household essentials from your Alexa speaker using only your voice. Jim Ryan, ABC News.
You're listening to The Opening Bell on 720 WGN.
Good morning. Welcome back to the program. It's 523, and we're here with Paul Nolte this morning, Kingsview Asset Management. Paul, a couple of other things. One other note I saw this week that was a little bit interesting. This notion that we're closer than we are not to a recession. We've talked about this in the past before mm-hmm. in the show, that usually recoveries last a certain number of
of years, and we're well beyond that. What's the risk as we move forward here?
You know, there's a couple things going on. One is recoveries don't necessarily die of old age. There's something that happens. There's a trigger point. And I think that's what everybody's kind of looking for as to what is going to be the trigger to catapult us into the next recession. We will get one. They haven't disbanded the economic cycle yet. The second part of it is having to do with the Fed. The Fed will continue to raise rates until they break something. Mm-hmm. They don't stop before the economy goes into a recession. So now that we're on this hiking cycle, and the Fed seems to be pretty aggressive about it, wanting to do it at least one more time this year and a couple more next year, the thought is that they will put us into a recession by increasing rates too much, and that will just stop investment and economic activity.
We saw earlier this week, we were talking earlier about tech stocks, and we saw the big drop in tech stocks earlier this week. I think it was something like $129 billion in market cap that was lost. How do we know if we have these stocks in our portfolio that they might be dangerous or toxic?
Well, dangerous, I think, is a better word. Apple, I wouldn't say is toxic. Yeah, but certainly when you take a look at 3 to 5, in Apple's case, we went from mid-150s to now the mid-140s. It's a big drop. Really what you want to do is what a lot of people don't do and what we do for a lot of our clients is take a look at what do you own? Because they own mutual funds. You're diversified, which is a good thing. But what do you own inside those mutual funds, and how are they weighted? And a lot of people look at ETFs the same way. Say, well, I'll just buy the S&P 500. Well, the largest weight in the S&P 500 is Apple and Google and Microsoft. Those are among the top 7 or 8 companies that are within the S&P 500. And if you have another 4 or 5 different mutual funds, you may have Apple and Microsoft, and you may duplicate that in other holdings. So you want to be cognizant of what it is you own. And because it's in a mutual fund or an ETF wrapper, doesn't necessarily mean that it's safe. You are diversified. I go back to the late 90s. People would have 5 or 6 mutual funds, but they were all internet funds. So, well, I've got 5 or 6 different funds, but they all own the same stuff. So when the bubble finally burst, they were all left holding the bag.
And I heard this week, and I kind of knew this, but people may have heard this term, too, this week. Here's a little term education, FANG stocks. it means Facebook, Apple, Amazon, Netflix, Alphabet, Google.
Yes, and they've changed, and they've put an M in there for Microsoft. Microsoft has made it this way, so it's now FANG stock. Yes, so there you are. But those are the ones that have been the poster children for this market. And when you look going into last week, 40 to 45% of the increase of the S&P 500 is directly attributable to those stocks.
Big plans for the weekend?
We're going to hang out at the Gold Coast Art Fair a little bit as the weather holds out. So it should be a nice weekend, and we're looking to be outside.
Dad's Day on Sunday?
You know, all of my children are gone, I'll be hoping they'll be dialing in at some point on Sunday.
So no tie or nothing like that?
Not yet.
Happy Father's Day, and we'll see you again next Friday.
Thank you.
Now, WGN Radio's daily conversation about the life of business and the business of life. This is The Opening Bell with Steve Grzanich on 720 WGN.
Good morning. Welcome back to the program. It is 5:38. Glad to have you here for our Friday edition of The Opening Bell. Lots happening in the aviation world this week. Air traffic, air complaints are higher this week. The Department of Transportation reporting nearly 10% jump in complaints from flyers, mainly because of delayed flights. Also seeing more action at the airports because it's summer travel season. Let's bring in Rick Cini of FareCompare.com in Dallas. He's the founder and CEO. Rick, good morning and welcome back to the Opening Bell. Glad to have you here. Let's start with the TSA checkpoints at the O'Hare at the airports with the summer travel season in full swing. What should people know when they hit these checkpoints?
Well, you know, we had a lot of issues at the tail end, especially in the Chicago airports area, the tail end of last spring and early summer. Lots of cable coverage of long lines at TSA, a few heads rolling last year, and it's gotten a lot better. Average wait times well under 10 minutes in many cases. And then there's been a few little minor changes to screening. They're doing a little bit more extra with laptops, as we've heard about the sort of travel potential laptop ban for transatlantic flights that they've been sort of tinkering with potentially doing. They did, at least in some countries, and you know, they've been talking about whether or not they're going to extend that or not. So there's, but that also extends out to TSA pre-check and global entry, which is essentially expedited screening.
One of the issues, the reasons we're talking about this is because all the estimates say this is going to be a record year, record summer for travel. What are the numbers? What are we thinking?
Yeah, an additional 9 million people this summer, going from like sort of 227 million up to, a, you know, just a little bit over 335 million. That's an additional few percentage point or two. And that's a pretty big number considering the airlines have been contracting for many years. So they have some extra money in their pocket, a little bit extra capacity. Consumers have some money and they're all going to be traveling. That means they have to screen, you know, several hundred thousand additional passengers each day around the United States, and that they've actually been staffing up at most of the airports. The airlines have been adding some extra staff along to get people along the way. Some technology has been added to many airports where you see wait time. So if you're in a line, you can actually go to a different line, for example. And there's also all sorts of phone apps coming out for wait times as well, if you're so inclined to check that out.
Is it fair to say that summer travel season adds new travelers to the mix, and is that why we see sometimes people who don't know what they're doing at the airports?
Yeah, you know, there's definitely people that only fly once a year, but you know, I talk to a bunch of TSA officers. They go through security with water accidentally too, and they have to go right back out through security. So it happens all the time, but it does slow things down. TSA PreCheck is about twice as fast at putting people through screening. Remember, that's pre-9/11 screening. You get to keep your shoes on, your laptop and liquid stay in the bag. You're going through a metal detector instead of a body scanner. And the cost is $80 for 5 years, $100 for global entry. If you also cross a border, including Mexico and Canada, it's worthwhile to actually get global entry so you get expedited through immigration and customs on your way back into the country.
At what point is it cost effective for people who don't travel a lot? I mean, how many times do you think you have to travel a year to make this cost effective?
Yeah, Steve, I think it's about two times per year is when you want to look at it. If you're flying two or more times, PreCheck is worth it. Now, I will say that you get to double dip with children, because if they're under 12, so if parents both get PreCheck and they're under 12, and you have two children, they get to actually go with the parents. So you get sort of half the price for those children, at least until age 12. After age 12, you'd have to get them PreCheck as well.
And the time that you save, do you literally get to walk by the people waiting in line and wave at them as you're going through?
You do in many cases. And if you're like me, especially if you travel quite a bit and you're doing short haul flights, you like to get to the airport, not at the 2 hour mark, at the 2 hour mark, but at the 30 minute mark,
right.
And you want to get through security and catch your flight, it's also a good option as well.
You mentioned some of those apps and other places where you can check the wait times. What's your favorite in that? Which one do you use?
You know, TSA actually has an app that I've been using from time to time that has the wait times in it. Supposedly officers are posting into that. There's a bunch of crowdsource apps out there as well. It's actually not bad to look at the Twitter feed for the particular airport as well. They also have sometimes better updates at the Twitter feed of the airport. So there's multiple sources for sort of checking that out. It's always good to have somebody with boots on the ground. And in some cases, they even have webcams. They're pretty good at TSA allowing video and photographs, for example, which is not the case, as we discussed in previous things, on airplanes.
Well, Ricky, you mentioned earlier that the TSA is still considering this laptop situation. I know there's been a lot of reporting both ways about this. What do you think is going on there behind the scenes that they're dealing with?
I think the big problem is, you know, most people have laptops, you know, in the actual main cabin. If you start putting, you know, 100, 110 laptops down below with lithium batteries, we saw one actually explode a while back and cause issues. The question is, what is gathering all those lithium ion batteries? I think that's the biggest holdup at the moment, is if you're going to check all that stuff, is there going to be an issue? And I think everybody's looking into that. I think on the flip side too, airlines are pushing back, saying people are just going to quit flying as much, especially business travelers that are paying more for more expensive tickets if they can't use their electronics and actually conduct business on the plane.
There's also sort of that undercurrent that there may be some sort of ongoing threat involving laptops too, isn't there?
Yeah, and in fact, in some cases through PreCheck, right now they're actually making you actually take your laptop out, which normally you wouldn't have to do, and put it in a bin for additional scrutiny. They're doing that at a few airports. They're working on technology to take a better look at these laptops. I've been to Europe many times, off and on in different locations. They actually make you flip on your laptop and see that it actually fires up. So there's all sorts of different rules that have been around for a while, but I do hope that they do not ban laptops, because it's something that's very useful, especially on a 9 or 10 hour flight.
We have been hearing a lot of reaction to the Trump administration's plans to privatize the nation's air traffic control system. I know you've chimed in a little bit on that. Now that the dust has settled in this plan, what do you like? What do you don't like?
Well, you know, I think on the plus side of this, if they can actually push it forward quickly, it's, you know, satellites versus ground radar. Can they actually do it in such a way where they're not installing something that's 10 or 15 years old by the time they actually finish it up? If that speeds it up at all, it's a, sort of a win-win for passengers. They get better on-time arrivals and departures. The airlines actually use less fuel, which is even better for the environment because that's less CO2. So I think overall, it's just about speeding it up. I guess on the flip side is, who's watching the watchers, right? If it's privatized, clearly, you know, airlines, if it's stacked with airline people actually running the thing, for example, they really need to have good oversight, and that's something that's complicated. So I think you could make a debate on each side, but I'd sort of err on the side of, let's get this technology in place. You know, when the U.S. is sort of at the same level of, you know, places in sub-Saharan Africa as far as technology, you need an upgrade.
I've heard people say, too, they're worried about their tickets. They're costing more. Is that a possibility?
Well, you know, at the moment, you know, there's a variety of funding mechanisms. You have September 11th as part of your ticket price. Most people don't know that's up to $10. You have a variety of FAA fees that are on there as well. In theory, they could be adding more to particular tickets in some cases. In practice, I got to have a feeling that anything related to taxes would have much higher oversight than this board.
All right, Rick, get us out of town. Any good fares?
Yeah, you know, I was actually looking at a couple different places. So if you're going into Europe, the most amazing place to go into out of the Chicago area is in the Nordic countries. You have Norway, Denmark, Sweden, all those under $900 round trip for mid-July. Those are good. Some of that's related to Norwegian Air. Some of it's related to WOW Airlines and some flights there, and prices dropping a bit is there. If you're looking sort of in the U.S., you can, again, with some of these ultra-low-cost airlines, you have tickets in the low 100s, and the other legacy airlines typically about 20 to 30% more. That's Boston, New York, Washington. You can get down to Miami just under $200, Orlando under $170. And if you want to go out to the West Coast, the two best ones right now are San Francisco at $219 and Portland at $244.
Looks good. Happy travels, Rick.
Hey, thanks.
Rick Cini is the founder and CEO of FareCompare.com in Dallas. You can follow him on Twitter at Rick Cini and FareCompare at FareCompare.
You're listening to The Opening Bell on 720 WGN.
On the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk, Dow futures are up 17 points. NASDAQ and S&P futures are also higher, and gold and silver trading up this morning. Just in from London this morning, police say a man with a knife has been arrested near the House of Commons in London. There have been no injuries. This incident, of course, comes just months after a man barreled his car into pedestrians on Westminster Bridge, charged into a Parliament courtyard. This incident appears to have been stopped, at least before anything happened. Again, a man with a knife arrested near the House of Commons in London this morning. Stay with WGN. We'll have more on that story as we get it. Let's check commodities and agriculture now. Good morning, Orion Samuelson.
Well, good morning. Back here in the Midwest, watching the rainfall as it did yesterday and overnight, and the forecast saying that more will come. Question is, will it come in the spring wheat country of the Dakotas? Because that's where it's needed, so we'll keep an eye on that. Environmental Protection Agency is not one of the favorite government agencies of agricultural producers, and they have a reputation of being very late on the announcement of what kind of quotas will be in place for ethanol and for soy diesel and all that. In coming years, they've been as much as 2 years behind in announcing those numbers. That's why it was kind of a surprise that the EPA will be proposing renewable fuel use requirements for 2018 in a matter of days. The proposal will mark the first from the administration under President Trump for the controversial renewable fuel standard. That's a law that goes back to 2005, aimed at cutting U.S. oil imports and boosting renewable fuel use. And the EPA broadly expected to hold its proposed requirements for conventional biofuel, that's mainly corn-based ethanol, and they are expected to hold that unchanged at 15 billion gallons. That's the maximum under the RFS. Now, this information is coming from people who spoke on condition of anonymity because they're not authorized to speak to the media. So we'll have to see if that one makes it. But something that did happen and is just in this morning, DuPont and Dow Chemical Company have won U.S. antitrust approval to merge on condition the company sells certain crop protection products and other assets. The asset sales required by U.S. antitrust enforcers, similar to what the companies had agreed to give up in a deal they struck with European regulators in March. The deal is one of several big mergers by farm suppliers, and the antitrust approval was quickly denounced by the head of the National Farmers Union, saying that farmers would face higher costs. Dow and DuPont announced the deal in December 2015. It was billed as an all-stock merger valued at $130 billion. So you're going to have to put a billion or two into that, Steve.
Can I borrow a few bucks, Orion?
Right.
All right. Orion, have a great weekend.
Thank you. You too.
All right, Orion Samuelson with us. 5:57 now on the WGN Associated Bank Market Outlook for this Friday. It's June 16th. The Commerce Department releases its report on home construction for May. The Labor Department reports on state unemployment rates. President Trump will head to Miami for an announcement on redrawing U.S. policy toward Cuba. Could impact consumer travel there as well as some banking and housing, travel and hotel tourism type stuff. Also today, President's Commission on Combating Drug Addiction and the Opioid Crisis holds its first meeting in Washington. And tonight, CBS Evening News anchor Scott Pelley will anchor his final broadcast of that show before turning his attention to focus on CBS News program 60 Minutes. Some of the things that could move the markets on this Friday, June 16th.